don't know if you're still eating and you just go right on and do that, but we thought we'd get started so we can get through our agenda as quickly as possible. I notice as I look around the room, we have lots of politicians in this room, and sometimes I think we take ourselves a little seriously, and maybe we ought not to do that. And the other day I heard a story that made me really stop and think about how the public perceives us. If I could have your attention, please, it would be helpful. But I heard a story the other day about the public perceives how they perceive politicians.
Your partner,
I'm going to throw something at you. I've been looking around to figure out what it's going to be.
Make sure you got a good aim.
That's right. That's for sure. Anyway, these doctors were sitting around having a big conversation, and they were all surgeons. And they were talking about the kind of people they like to operate on. One of them said, I love to operate on construction workers. Said, if you have parts left over, it's okay, because they always do, and they just fold in the truck and go on. And if you're late getting it done, that's okay, too, because they never get their jobs done on time. And they talked about plumbers, and they talked about electricians. And finally, one of them said, I really like to do surgery on politicians. And one of the doctors said, what? He said, yeah, I like to do surgery on politicians. He said, well, why is that? He said, because they have no brains, they have no heart, and they have no gut. But the best part of it is their head and their ass are interchangeable. So now we know what people think about us. Okay, we'll move right on to the motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting of December the 8th, and they have been distributed.
So moved.
Motion's been made. Do I hear a second?
Ma'am.
Been seconded? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. And I skipped over the roll call, so this time I'll call on Steve Fry to do that for me.
You can just.
Yeah.
Steve Williams?
Here.
Howard Anderson? James Turner?
Here.
Thomas Bell?
Here.
James Hinsco? Bob Bailey?
Present.
Nancy Carville?
Present.
Jim Morgan?
Here.
Beth Thompson? Jason Stevens? Deanna Holliday. Patrick Lighty.
Here.
Bill Dingus. Harry Porter. Ralph Klein.
Here.
Katrina Keith. Kenneth Atkins.
Here.
Robert Paisley. Don Bias. Shane Dillon.
Here.
Paul Davis.
Here.
Stephen Tolwood.
Here.
Nikki Smith.
Present.
Alex Vanderpool. Stephen Gilmore. Randy Wheeler.
Here.
Michael Grady.
Here.
Robert Carpenter. William Hopkins. Bill Biggs, Ron Fields, Andy Skidmore, Tom Smith, Greg Bailey, Robert Pennington, Harry Keller, Elwood Penn, Rob Watson, Vaughn Wilson, Max Francis, Scott Thompson, Greg Thomas, Bart Bryant.
Bart's present.
Matt Manns.
Moving right along then, we'll move right into the Executive Director's report, and I'll call on Chris Childs.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here with us today. I'll be brief in our executive director's report. We have a lot of project updates coming later on in the agenda, just sort of work out that way with the timing in the year. So I'll be brief. I just want to mention a couple staff changes that we have. As many of you all may know, Dora Young, who's been with our office for 26 years, recently retired back January 31st was her last day. She was our finance manager and office manager and therapist at a lot of times. So as Dora retired, we promoted Danielle Slusher to her position as finance manager. Danielle's been Dora's assistant for fiscal assistant for 11 years. So we're honored to have Danielle move into that position, which left an opening at Danielle's old position for fiscal assistant. So we advertised for that. We actually promoted from within. So we hired Steve Fry, who just did the minutes, was on the Region 2 side of what we do here. He was on the project administration team. So he's moved into that position as fiscal assistant. We're very excited to have Steve on board. So you'll all be seeing him at all future meetings. Which left an opening then. We slide everything around for a Region 2 project staff person who were in the process of advertising hiring for that. But congratulations to Danielle and to Steve. We've got some upcoming MOAs/MOUs, so Memorandum of Understanding. Those are actually part of the work program, which is the big document we'll be voting on here in just a minute. So those are just MOUs between Cuyahoga and different state and federal agencies that we interact with and transit agencies as well. So we will vote on those in April's meeting for the final versions that are being worked on and legal's looking over them and just, you know, the bureaucracy is taking hold of that. But wanted to at least let you all know that's coming down the pipe. We'll have a lot of MOUs and MOAs to vote on in April. One of those is the what's become known as the Umbrella MOU. So that's when we became a TMA, Cuyahoga became a TMA back after the 2010 census, it was decided that we need one big, huge MOU amongst Cuyahoga, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, all the transit agencies, plus our neighboring MPO in Charleston, RIC, or Region 3. So we're in the process of making one big, giant MOU that just has all the individual MOUs under it, and it is as legally acting as it sounds. But we'll have more on that, and we'll actually have that hopefully up for a vote in April's meeting. The last on the report, proposed West Virginia Regional Council mergers. If many of you all will remember, the West Virginia Development Office had began initiating plans to combine regional councils across the state. That's important to Cuyahoga because Cuyahoga's sister agency is a regional council here for southwestern West Virginia. So under the proposal would be to combine Region 2, which is us here, with Region 3, which is the regional council in Charleston. And obviously one of the major concerns of that is what impact does that have on Cuyahoga, because Cuyahoga serves three states. We don't just serve parts of West Virginia. After fierce resistance from across the state, county commissioners and mayors alike, the development office has decided to at least put that on hold. And, you know, informally or off the record, I've heard that, you know, they're not going to move forward with that. They just got too much resistance to it. So actually no news is good news in this instance, but they have not decided to pick that up. Again, I just wanted to mention it because it's something that we had talked about in previous weeks.
You wanted to just continue the next program, too.
So next up, we got the presentation of the draft FY 2019 Unified Planning Work Program, or UPWP. We've got to work on that acronym, but UPWP for short, and budget documents. So next on your list here, you should have this guy. It's about yay thick. So this is the Bible that we go to from fiscal year to fiscal year. It lists everything that we do for the next fiscal year, FY19, our budget, our studies, our projects, our staff, everything you need, or this dictates everything that we do for the next fiscal year. This is the draft. So what happens is once the policy committee approves of submitting the draft, we then send the draft off to our state and federal agency partners. They look over it and give any suggestions or changes, and then they send it back to us. And then in the next meeting that we have in April, we'll approve the actual final version. So this is the draft, but before we can submit it to the federal agencies for their review, we do have to have the board's approval to do so. Next, with that, and we'll do one motion to approve all of them here in just a minute. The next thing is the indirect cost rate, which is the next sheet on your list here, which looks like this. I do just want to mention that the indirect cost rate is actually a part of this document. I just pulled it out into its own copy for convenience, but it's in there, page 72, I believe. So the indirect cost rate is just the percent of our budget that goes to indirect costs. It's 42.82% is our fringe rate, and then 52.4% is our indirect rate. The fringe rate is just a percentage of all of the fringe costs that we incur. So you're looking at health insurance, retirement, FICA, Medicare, OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits, workers' comp, Social Security. So all the things that the agency pays for towards the employees in addition to salaries. So that's an important number for our agencies and our friends as part of our cost allocation plan. So that is just, I wanted to pull that out because that is one of the other things that we do have to approve. The next one and then is the Kiowa authorizing resolution, which is the green. And if you all just noticed, I've mentioned it before, but we try to color code. So what's highlighted in green on your agenda is on the green paper is the resolution. So for your convenience. So this is the Kiowa authorizing resolution. This is just the resolution that authorizes us to submit that draft work program to the federal agency. And then last, but certainly not least, is the gray resolution right here. This is specific for Kentucky. Kentucky requires a separate resolution to use for the use of our sub-allocated funds. So this is just same process. Kentucky just requires another separate resolution. So we're including that. So again, these are all just resolutions and documents that we're going to send off to our state and federal agency partners for them to review and then send back to us with comments and changes, and then the final version will be approved at our next meeting in April.
Okay, we just need a motion to approve those resolutions.
Make a motion.
Motion's been made to approve both resolutions. Do I hear a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. Is there any discussion on either resolution? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. If you all are wondering why I'm conducting the meeting today, it's because our president, Bob Paisley, is in Hawaii. He did not offer to take any of us with him. He did tell me that he bought a grass skirt, but I just can't get that visual out of my head.
He told Christy he was going to send a picture of him in a grass skirt coming up from here. Tom said she was going to put it on the TV screen in the courthouse, but then he said he wasn't going to do it.
Back off, huh? Well, I hope he's enjoying himself. He said this was one thing on their bucket list, so they wanted to get it taken care of. Okay, we'll move on to transportation performance management updates from Laura Poole with FHWA Ohio Division. Laura?
Hello, everybody. I am Laura Poole with the FHWA Ohio Division. I am the plan contact for Kiowa. I think this is the first time I'm meeting many of you, so I'm glad to be here. And I just want to give you an overview of transportation performance management. It's something that you all probably have heard about at least once or twice in the last, probably 6 years or so. It was originally included in the regulations under MAP 21, and it was carried forward in the FAST Act in 2015. But now it's time to start doing and implementing, so I wanted to provide you all an overview of what that's going to look like. So, if you haven't heard of this, just to give you a brief overview, FHWA defines performance management as a strategic approach that uses system information to make investment and policy decisions to achieve national performance goals. There were 7 goals included in both MAP 21 and FAST Act, and they range in topic area from roadway safety to congestion reduction to environmental sustainability. So those are kind of the areas that we're focusing around. And why is this important? Some agencies, for example, the Ohio Department of Transportation, have done something similar to this for the last couple of years, and they see it as a best management practice. This, you know, provides a way for agencies to make policy and project decisions based on the data that they have, and that allows them to provide better investments to the public and provides accountability and transparency. So, you know, it's really integrating this into your policy and decision-making processes. And there are multiple federal agencies involved with this. Both FHWA and FTA have regulations on this. I'm only speaking towards the FHWA highway measures and targets, so just keep in mind that there are other transit-related actions that you can contact FTA or your DOTs about. So before I get much further, I want to go ahead and define a couple of terms that I'll be using. As you can see on the screens or on your slides in your packet, the key two terms are measures and targets. A measure is something that FHWA established, or FTA, in final rules that have come out in the last couple of years. You can read the definition, but basically it's just a way to capture something and to assess a topic. You can see on the bottom an example of that would be the percent of trucks reliable arrival time. And then targets are something that state DOTs and MPOs are going to be setting. And that's basically a quantifiable level based on what the measure was. So you can see on the bottom that with the example of the reliable arrival time, the target would be 80% on time. So that's a specific numeric value. And state DOTs and MPOs will coordinate on this process throughout the next couple of years. So one key thing I want to make sure that you all understand is what your role is. Both FHWA, Ohio, ODOT, and West Virginia all agree that the board will adopt a resolution to approve the target. So that's kind of the key item that you all will be doing and engaging in. But to take it a couple of steps further, we also want to make sure that, you know, if your local agency constituents are providing applications, whether that's for MPO funding or state DOT funding, that they keep in mind what these targets are, because, you know, some MPOs or DOTs might adjust their project prioritization process to introduce these topics and the targets further into their system. So, you know, really making sure they understand what's going on. So this is the general process. I've already addressed the national goals, measures, and targets. So we're now on to 4, 5, and 6. The accountability and transparency really comes from the fact that information about these measures and targets has to be incorporated into MPO and State Department of Transportation plans, including the TIP and the long-range plans. So those documents are public-facing. They'll have to include what the targets are, narrative about how they got there. So that's really how 4, 5, and 6 relate, and then, you know, it's a feedback loop. So based on how somebody did on their target, maybe they then go back and look at their measures and their targets. Just to go over the timeline, and as I mentioned, there were final rules. So the first column just defines what those were. They relate to the safety, performance, pavement, bridge, reliability, freight, and CMAQ. And the key things that I want to hit home with you all are the timelines in the last two columns. So the MPOs for safety have to set targets by February 27th. So that's going to happen today, so you all are moving forward with that. And this will happen on an annual basis. So by February 27th of each year, the board will have to make a resolution on those targets. And then come May 27th of this year, if the MTP or the TIP are amended or updated, information about those safety performance measures and that safety data will have to be included. So safety is kind of on a different timeline. And then for pavement, bridge, reliability, freight, and CMAQ, the MPOs for the first round will have to set targets by November 16th of this year. So come November, the board will have to adopt a resolution on those targets. And then you'll have an extra year to include that information in the TIP or the MTP. And one date that isn't on here, but it relates to the umbrella MOU that Chris was talking about, is that each MPO and State Department of Transportation with the transit agencies have to create agreements that describe the roles and responsibilities of each agency for performance management, and that will have to be adopted by May of this year. So that's one other date to keep in mind. All right, so in terms of the FPO's options in establishing their targets, there's two things that you could do. The first is to, as you see on the screen, agree to plan and program projects to help meet the State Department of Transportation targets. A lot of people refer to this as supporting the state targets or adopting the state targets. It's all the same thing. And basically, you know, the State Department of Transportation adopts their targets beforehand in coordination with the MPO. So this isn't the State Department of Transportation handing down targets to the MPOs and saying, you must do this. The MPOs have a choice, and they've been involved in the process. The second option is to committing to quantifiable targets for the metropolitan planning area. So, you know, Cuyahoga is a multi-state MPO. If the data showed that it would be better for the MPO to establish one target for their entire region versus supporting three different states' targets, that would be fine. The key with in determining which option is best is the MPO staff looking at the data for each of these measures to determine what the trends look like, to determine what the best option is. And these options apply to each measure. So for safety, you could agree to set the state target for three of the measures and then commit to quantifiable targets for two of the measures. So it can be pretty flexible. So I'm going to just quickly walk through what the measures are. I won't really touch on safety since Chris will be talking about those, but you can see them up on the screen. And as I mentioned, these will be established on a yearly basis. For pavement, there's four measures. Percent of interstate pavements in good condition and poor condition, and then percent of non-interstate NHS pavement in good and poor condition. These targets will be set by November 16th, as I mentioned, and they'll only be set about every 4 years. And for bridges, it's percent of NHS bridges in good and poor condition. Again, these are four-year targets that will be set by November 16th. The reliability measures are percent of person miles traveled on the interstate and non-interstate NHS that are reliable. Again, these are the four-year November 16th targets. And then finally, freight is truck travel time reliability index, And that's based on an equation that was included in the final rule. And again, that's a four-year target set by November 16th. So then we get into one that's not going to be applicable to you all for a couple of years, but I just wanted to touch on it for your awareness. These two targets relate to congestion management and air quality. So they are the annual hours of peak hour excessive delay, or we refer to this as PHEV, and then the percent of non-single occupancy vehicle travel in each urbanized area. So the difference between these two targets and all of the others is that they're based on urbanized area. So if you see the map in your packet or on the screen, there's the purple shaded boxes. Those are the MPO areas. And then there's that orange funny looking shape that goes throughout. That's the urbanized area. And the reason why Cuyahoga has to establish these targets is because you can see that orange urbanized area extends over into the RIC metropolitan planning area, which is in non-attainment or maintenance for air quality. So you'll have to work with both RIC, Cuyahoga, Ohio, West Virginia, and Kentucky to all establish one target for each of these measures. This isn't where the state sets one and the MPO sets one. They all have to agree on these two measures. But thankfully, this won't have to happen until the second performance period, which will be in 2022. So there's other MPOs that have to go through the same thing by May 20th of this year. For example, the Cincinnati MPO is also a tri-state MPO. So we encourage you all to talk to those individuals and see how they've done it and work to kind of learn what the process is. So this just shows for those measures who needs to be coordinated with. Are there any questions? A lot here. Yes.
If the MPO sets established, for example, projects to eliminate or work on the air quality and things like that, how does the state react to their investments to that goal?
How are they incorporated?
I mean, how are they to consider the recommendations of that? For example, with air quality issues that are multi-state or whatever year, would the state of Ohio recognize that as a project?
So the way they measure and the targets are established for the air quality, if an MPO uses CMAQ funds, the project is entered into its system. And FHWA approves that. So for these measures, the MPOs and the State Departments of Transportation will look at the project in their area in that system to determine what the air quality benefits are. So these state DOTs will be looking at the projects in the MPO areas when setting those targets. And, you know, they'll have to work together to determine if there's other information that they want to take into consideration in addition to that information. Well, any other questions come up, feel free to contact me.
Thank you so much, Laura. We appreciate it. Next, we have a presentation of safety performance measures by Chris Childs. And after that, we need to approve a resolution that says Cuyahoga agrees to support the respective safety goals established by all three states. So that'll come after his presentation.
And I'll just be a brief presentation. Thank you, Laura. It's a lot of information. That was a great job of explaining it for everyone else. That's why we printed off the presentation so you can take that home for some bedtime reading too and come back to us with questions. I would just mention briefly, we kind of, Ralph, you know what CMAQ is, obviously, but we talk a lot about CMAQ, that's an acronym. CMAQ stands for Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality Improvement. So basically, there are different pots of money that are available for different types of projects that work to improve air quality. And each state handles that a little bit differently. In Ohio, for example, Cuyahoga gets some of those funds directly, and then we just distribute those out to different projects. West Virginia is a little different. Kentucky's a little different. But when we're talking about CMAQ, that's just a pot of money for air quality improvement type projects. When I say presentation, is the next thing here actually is the resolution. So this just summarizes what Laura had just said. This is the safety performance measures. So we're going to approve or make a resolution to adopt and support each state's individual safety performance measures. And then in November, we'll do the pavement and bridge conditions. And then in 2022, we'll do the air quality. But the thing in this resolution I will draw your attention to is the one, two, three, starting with the fourth whereas. You can see the West Virginia Division of Highways has established a statewide target, yada, yada, yada. So those three paragraphs right there deal with West Virginia, Kentucky, and then Ohio, and their different safety targets that each state DOT has set. And those are the numbers that Cuyahoga is agreeing to support with this resolution. So we talked about numbers and figures and statistics, but I wanted to just to pull your attention to right there are in this resolution, those are the main things that have those numbers there. And again, that's specific data that's, you know, trackable, tangible data that these performance measures are based on that we're trying to achieve and improvements that we're trying to achieve. And that does have something to do with the Cuyahoga staff. That does influence our decisions as we talk about different projects and different scopes of work and different projects to push and looking at different funding scenarios. So this isn't just something that just is approved and we all go along with our lives. It does, you know, impact Cuyahoga staff in a positive way, and it does have, you know, we do have a role in this, and it does influence the way that we tackle projects and look at different projects.
Okay, you have a copy of the resolution in front of you. What's your pleasure?
So moved.
Motion's been made to approve. You're here second. Has been seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Move on down to Cuyahoga Transportation Studies and Project Updates. And we're going to begin with Tri-State Transit Expansion Study, and we have Gretchen Johnson on the phone, I believe. Gretchen?
Oh, is Gretchen on here? Is anybody on there?
Yeah, I'm on. This is Steve Bergman.
Okay.
Is Gretchen Johnson on the phone?
Well, they have it in there. I said, well, I'll just let y'all know the presentation that she's going to give is in your packet.
I'm sorry. She is going to be an email, so she said she was online on here, so I don't know where she is.
Okay. Paul, is there anything that you want to mention about that?
This is an ongoing study that we've had about the impact that the Transit Authority has on the tri-state area. The only other thing that I would say is that they're making suggestions and recommendations on how we may improve or adjust service over the next several years. This has been a partnership with Cuyahoga, TTA, and the state of West Virginia. It has been going on now for a period of time. And Salim, feel free to jump in, or Terry. It is wrapping up, obviously. I don't think her presentation for it, but it is wrapping up, and Nelson Niger has done an excellent job for us. And there will be forthcoming a final report that I'm sure we'll be presenting to the policy board when it comes about. And it was a partnership between the three, TPA, West Virginia, and Cuyahoga, and that's how we funded the project.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We'll move on to the Lawrence County Non-Motorized Bicycle and Pedestrian Plan Mobility Study, and we have Matt Selforth on the phone. Matt?
Hi, yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
So I'll go through the presentation here real quick. So the Lawrence County Transportation Study included various tasks. I know I've reported on a few of those before, but I'll update you where we stand on all of them. Basically, there's four tasks on here. We were looking at Park Avenue traffic study on Park Avenue in the city of Ironton from 6th Street to US 52. And then the other parts of the study were looking at the impacts of the new bridge that opened up over the Ohio River, specifically looking at trucks as they travel through Ironton. Then we're looking at Lawrence County, as well as the city of Ironton, bicycle and pedestrian plan, looking at facility improvements there. And then the last part was a sidewalk assessment for the city of Ironton to assess any of the curb ramps for ADA compliance in the city of Ironton. If you go to the next slide, we did hold a public involvement meeting and stakeholder meetings last summer. And as we look to wrap up these studies, they're all in draft form. We are looking at scheduling a stakeholder meeting in March to go over all the final recommendations. So going down the next slide, the Park Avenue traffic study, we developed conceptual improvements for Park Avenue. If you look at the next slide, the fifth slide down, it talks about Park Avenue concepts. It shows some of the improvements that are recommended, adding a traffic signal, improving sidewalks, redefining some drives, adding a refugee island for pedestrians. So if you look at the next slide where it talks about recommendations for Park Avenue, there's an estimated cost of about $1.2 million to make those improvements. And again, it's signal timing, new traffic signal at 8th Street, looking at a right-in, right-out out of 9th Street onto Park Avenue that kind of supplements some of the development plans in the 8th and 9th Street areas just southeast of Park Avenue. And then, as I mentioned before, putting in some new sidewalks, specifically under the US 52 bridge going up to the Ironton Hills area. So all these reports are online on the Kiowa website. So if anybody wants to go in there and look at the specific improvements and recommendations, feel free to. The next part of this is the truck route in Ironton. Like I mentioned, that it created a couple of new patterns in the city with the new bridge opening. But the recommendations that came out of the study were to make improvements at the Jefferson Street intersection coming off of the new bridge, as well as on 2nd Street between Jefferson and Adams. That's in the estimate of $75,000 to $125,000 construction estimate, as well as making improvements at the intersection of 2nd Street and Park, as well as 4th Street and Park. Mainly for truck movements, making right turns onto Park Avenue. If you look at the next slide, it has a diagram of the recommended improvements coming off the bridge at Jefferson and 2nd. Basically, it's restriping, creating a new right turn lane coming off of the bridge rather than there's currently a left turn lane there only. So it's going to shift traffic a little bit around there, so it's not queuing up as much on the bridge, and it's not it's making it through the traffic signal cycles. There on the northwest part of 2nd between Jefferson and Adams, it restripes that to eliminate a left turn lane, but it creates some new through lanes. If you go to the next rendering proposal, it says proposed revisions to 2nd Street. You'll see that as we get rid of that left turn lane between Adams and Jefferson, it creates a good opportunity to provide some new parking and some new sidewalks and tree lawns back behind Dollar General and where there's potential new development on 2nd Street. Real quick, there's planned improvements at 2nd on the next plan view there at 2nd and Park where trucks, there's a conflict with each other. We recommend moving the stop bars and restriping and eliminating half of the width of the sidewalk along 2nd. If you go to the next plan view drawing, it shows the intersection of 4th and Park, and it shows where trucks are having trouble making that turn, right turn onto Park Avenue. So we recommend pushing the curb back. You'd have to move the traffic signal post and sign and possibly purchase a little bit of right-of-way there into the parking lot, but that allows those trucks to make that movement. Moving forward then to the recommendations for the bicycle and pedestrian plan, we conducted studies, we did some surveys, and we did some benchmarking, and we developed a master plan for Lawrence County as well as Ironton. If you go to the next slide, it shows a long list for Lawrence County recommendations, anywhere from bicycle boulevards to connectors to new paths to bike lanes to signage and sharrows. So a whole long list of recommended improvements in the county. And then if you go to the next slide, it shows the Ironton recommendation list. Again, kind of a whole list of different recommendations for the city of Ironton, you know, ranging anywhere from a couple million dollars to just a couple thousand dollars, mainly just for signing and striping. And so you see sidewalk repairs, shared use paths, boulevards, again, signing and striping. So again, in on the drafts online, it provides maps and a list of all these potential recommendations. And then lastly is the Ironton sidewalk assessment. We went and did some data collection. We did LIDAR mapping last year, and we identified some deficiencies. We've went through and prioritized identified all the areas, the curbs, sidewalks where either the curb ramps don't meet ADA because of elevations or because the conditions are poor and wouldn't allow for good pedestrian access. And we are currently developing that plan that would determines the cost and how to implement that. So that'll be completed here in a few weeks. And with that, that finalizes it, and I can answer any questions.
Okay, does anybody have a question? Anything at all? Okay, thank you so much, Matt. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Lawrence County US 52 Interchange Justification. We have Steve Bergman on the phone. Steve?
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Steve Bergman with the Mannequin Smith Group, and I'm the project manager for the Lawrence US 52 Interchange Study. We were authorized and started the work late last fall, just for your information. Second slide. The traffic and safety study for US 52 and State Route 7 was completed previously in 2006, and it recommended interchanges at the following locations: the Burlington Retail Area Interchange between Burlington Macedonia Road and Walmart Way. And the purpose of that was really to improve safety and congestion by eliminating current at-grade intersections along that stretch of roadway. The other interchange recommendation was Charlie Creek Road Interchange, and that was a diamond interchange. The purpose of our study is to confirm interchange locations along US 52, as well as identify local roadway improvements to improve safety, congestion, and access within the study area. Next slide. This is basically our study area. It extends from just west of the Prestera trucking to the US 52 river crossing to the east. It also includes some local roadway network, as you can see. And as part of our contract, we are also performing safety analysis at County Road 1, County Road 15 area on US 52. Next slide. I'll just go through what we've completed to date. We've defined the study area. We've reviewed the background information. We want to make sure that that initial investment in that previous study is considered in the work that we're doing as follow-up. We completed traffic counts at the intersections identified on the slide. And we've also completed turning movement forecasts, which are going to help us in the preliminary design phase. Next slide. We have also documented data from the field. We've had folks out in the field that are documenting field conditions. We've held a stakeholder kickoff meeting on November 15th of last year and reviewed the purpose and for the study and the work that has been completed to date. So we've also completed work on a sub-area travel demand forecasting model. So we've taken the regional model, taken a portion of that applies to our study area, and then are refining and validating that model to be used to test different layouts and scenarios as we work with the stakeholders. Next slide. We've also performed ECAT safety analysis. That's the analysis of the study area and County Road 1, County Road 15. We've developed future year ECAT for County Road 1, County Road 15 area, and baseline crash frequencies within the study area. Next slide. Our next steps is to verify the future land use and make sure that our sub-area model includes the future development that's going to impact our traffic volumes. We want to finalize our future traffic volumes, document and map environmental resources within the study area. We are in essence following the ODOT IJS interchange justification study process. So a lot of the items that I've identified in next steps are going to feed into that process. What we want to do is hand over an IJS document, which would include a funding plan, a financial plan, that we could present to try to get construction funding for this project. We've also we're going to be identifying any geometric deficiencies within the study area. We will hold another stakeholder meeting in March, where we'll present existing conditions, we'll develop a purpose and need, that purpose and need will feed into the NEPA document, develop and present conceptual alternatives, and develop evaluation criteria as we analyze conceptual, feasible, and a preferred alternative. Last slide is the schedule. We can make this available if anybody wants to see a copy of this. That's all I had. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer that.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Steve? Hearing none, thank you so much, Steve. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Now we have I-64 Exit 8 Mixed Use Development and Traffic Mobility Study, and we have Lindsay Walker from Kimley Horn on the phone. Lindsay?
Yes, I am here. Hopefully y'all can hear me.
Yes. Sure.
Okay, great. So we got started on this project late last year as well, and it's a very interesting project since it's a little ambiguous on the different things that could go into it. So we've had to try to rein that in and focus in on exactly what we want to come out of this study. So if you go to the project background slide, those are the tasks that we have put together for basically looking at various land use and mobility in the vicinity of the I-64 West Virginia 152 interchange. What makes this interesting is it's a highly progressive tourism corridor with some destinations, and really looking at what we can do at this specific area to look at mobility, to get into downtown Huntington, to get out to Heritage Farm, to get out to some of the local tourist destinations. So we're trying to figure out what this undeveloped area could possibly turn into and what the mobility needs are for it. First task that we had, and you can see highlighted in red, are what we have done to date on the study. Did the existing conditions inventory, pulling a lot of the GIS information so we can really get a handle on what the existing infrastructure is and what the planned projects are. So anything that we recommend is going to be complementary to what is in the plans. Working on right now the capacity analysis, setting up a synchro model to evaluate where there might be some needs as far as the mobility component and safety as well. We also have the economic study task two that we're trying to get an assessment of what potentially could be supported in the area, and then use that to determine some of the land use, a general concept plan around the interchange, and tie that into the traffic mobility components. So then the next task three, four, and five is where we are getting into right now, is the heart of the study. Task three being looking at the interchange itself and what the mobility issues are there. Task four is focusing a little bit more on the downtown area, and then 5, the overall documentation. The other task is a lot of stakeholder input and steering committee meetings that we're trying to bring in the stakeholders, the local landowners, and get a feel for what they want as part of this study and have some public meetings as well. So the next slide shows the study area, so that gives you a little bit better frame of reference on where this plan is going to overall come into play. So you have the middle one being the interchange itself, and we're looking at the different components around there, talking about lodging needs, whether there's a need for visible lodging located near the interchange, or possible a welcome center. And then we're going to tie in going to downtown Huntington, and then going the other direction towards Beach Fork Lake. So the corridor itself, what needs to happen, and then how we can tie basically north and south of the interchange. So the next slide, I think, is really helpful on what we've initially been hearing. We had a kickoff meeting, and we've had a first meeting with the steering committee. We'll have 2 more meetings with them as well. And what we have been hearing is 2 major things, the mobility and the implementation, that it's a very undeveloped area, and we need to figure out how we can really make this, we can take advantage of the destinations around there and how we can tie that into the interchange and make it more accessible into downtown Huntington, Beach Fork Lake. The implementation is the second part, is we don't want this to be just an overall glorified concept plan, but we want to look for ways that we can make this implementable. And that also ties into possibly looking at some zoning city limits, because of where those lie. If we put in this plan in place, do we need to make some recommendations to expand possibly city limits so we can make sure that what we're doing goes into effect later on, and possible ways of tax increment funding, different things like that, that we can hopefully look for implementation processes. So the last slide is our current work and where we're going. So we have a second meeting set up at the end of March. At that point, we're going to be talking about draft alternatives. We will have the traffic and safety completed, the market assessment completed, and so we will have, at that point, all the information that we need, and we'll have started to put together the concept plans that we can share. We'll share with the project team and then with the steering committee and get feedback on that. Really, the overwhelming thing that we have heard, too, from the stakeholders and the steering committee is there's a lot of excitement about this, that they're looking for a really good plan to develop this and bring a cohesive plan to this corridor that's really going to help spur the development that people would like to see here. So that was a pretty quick overview of the study. Any questions from anybody?
Does anybody have any questions for Lindsay? Hearing none, we want to thank you so much, Lindsay, for doing that presentation. And we'll move on to the Tri-State Airport Multimodal Economic Impact Study, and we have Eric Lang. And I think Eric's on the phone. Eric?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Eric Lang with CDM Smith, based here in Cincinnati, and I'll be talking to you about the economic impact study for the Huntington Tri-State Airport. Moving on to the next slide, let me start by providing a quick overview of what I plan to talk about today. I'll cover 3 basic items, what we were tasked to do, what we've accomplished to date, and what we have left to do. So moving on to slide number 3. We were tasked to complete an economic impact study of your airport, as well as qualitatively assess some of the multimodal improvements in the region. And understanding what an economic impact study does is key to interpreting its results. And I find the easiest way to think of an economic impact study is in terms of 3 basic elements, the ones you see here: measures, categories, and types of economic impact. Now, measures, those are fairly straightforward. Employment is the number of full-time jobs plus the fractional portion of part-time jobs added together. Payroll is simply the salary, wages, and benefits tied to the jobs measured under employment. And then finally, output is the economic activity of a business or organization. So, for example, We typically use gross revenues produced by a company in a year as its output, or in the case of, for example, a corporate flight department that doesn't generate revenues, we'll use its annual operating expenditures as a measure of its economic output. Moving on to categories, most obvious one is the on-airport activity, and that consists of businesses like airlines, the concessions in the terminal, the restaurants, the gift shops, rental car companies, flight schools, the FBO that provides fuel to the airlines and to the other aircraft users on the airport. That's fairly obvious. The two categories that are not quite as obvious consist of capital improvements. Those are expenditures for things like runway improvements, taxiway rehabilitation, building new hangars, big expenditures that don't occur every year. Then as well as the impact from visitors. And the economic impact from visitors takes place off airport, generally in places like hotels and restaurants where they're spending money in the region. And then finally, the types of economic impact. The direct impacts are those where the initial transaction takes place. Those are fairly obvious. What isn't quite as obvious is what is called the multiplier impact, and that is the result of those direct impacts recirculating within the area of study, in this case the tri-state region, until those transactions leak beyond the boundaries. So we have an economic impact model that takes into account those transactions and estimates the multiplier impact. And together with the direct impacts, multiplier and direct impacts together give you the total economic impact of the airport. So with that background, I'll move on to slide number 4, talk about a little bit about what we've accomplished so far. We're well along in the study. Last November, I visited the airport to meet with the airport staff, tenants on the airport in order to gather economic data. Since then, I've followed up with numerous inquiries and gathered all the data I need to accomplish the on-airport activity portion of the study. The visitor impacts, we are estimating through the use of a passenger survey effort that will be finished by the end of this month. Once we have all this data, we're going to be entering it into the economic input-output model, including the tri-state region multipliers that are used to estimate the total economic impacts for the airport. So moving on to slide number 5, these are the elements of the study that we have remaining to do, and they consist of these items, analyzing the passenger data once it's available and including those results in the model. We'll need to confirm and validate the outputs of the model, make sure that they're accurate, and then once all that is done, we can draft the deliverables, a technical report, an executive summary sheet, and a slide presentation. We plan to have this finished no later than the end of May. Slide number 6, please. So that wraps up where we are on this project. I want to thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
Okay, does anybody have any questions for Eric? Well, Eric, I don't think so thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the Barbersville and Milton non-motorized transportation studies. Martin Rutenplan and CDM Smith.
Hi, folks. This is Martin Guttenplan with CDM Smith. We're tasked with putting together non-motorized transportation studies for both the city of Milton and the village of Barbersville. Next slide. And what we're doing is looking at what's currently out there in terms of walking and biking environment. And ultimately, we'll propose some sidewalk and roadway improvements to complete the best possible biking and walking network they've got, can get. But we'll also prioritize it so that the most needed things can be addressed first. And also, we'll be doing this in a way that it facilitates those improvements going directly into the next phase, which would be design, providing they get funded. We'll also be doing an ADA assessment, looking at curb ramps and sidewalk connectiveness and the condition, so that hopefully we can get that poor guy in the wheelchair out of the middle of the road like that. So far in the study, we're about a third of the way in. We're currently evaluating the existing conditions. We've looked at census data, and interestingly enough, some of the looking at that at the income and employment, there's some pretty low income and low employment going on, and makes a real case for making these non-motorized improvements in those two areas. Also, there's an aging segment of the population that won't be driving, and they need ways of getting around besides just driving. To give you kind of a picture of where we are, this week we were out there collecting data, looking at all the existing sidewalks and crossings. We're currently putting that into a format for both the public meeting coming up, public meetings on March 8th, and into our existing conditions report. We're still gathering all the related development activity information, and we expect to have our existing conditions portion wrapped up in the next couple of weeks. As I mentioned, we are going to meet with the communities on March 8th. We'll be meeting with Barbersville from 11 to 1, the public, and then also Milton from 4 to 6. If any of you represent that area or nearby, you may want to come by City Halls in either of those communities. I should also mention that we were given a list of bus stop shelter requests in Milton, and we're evaluating those requests as well, both in terms of ADA and also crossing, so that people can get to the other side of the road safely as well. So we expect to have a draft report which incorporates those public comments and ideas. We'll be asking people to give us their destinations and where they'd like to be able to walk to, and what and to inform us of some of their ideas of what would be the best way to connect places, and also what their main challenges are. We should have a draft report by the middle of May, and then we'll as part of that, we'll have some what we call typical sections of what some of those proposed improvements would look like, and also some planning level costs. So that's, if you can go to the next slide if you haven't, the one that looks like a board game. Our next steps, this just graphically shows where we are. We're getting ready to go to the public meeting. Then we'll draft the tech report, determine the project costs, and we should have a final report by June 30. And that's what I got. But I'll be glad to answer any questions or suggestions.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Martin?
On that slide, are we working on anything besides Aiken County, South Carolina? You had a project up there. Can you back up one or two? There are projects.
Oh, the cost.
Draft report.
Yeah, if you could go back up to the previous slide. Are you talking about the Aiken County?
Yeah.
Yeah, all that was is just an example of how we come up with prioritization and project cost estimates. yeah, we did a plan for Aiken County. That's just there as an example. Was there a particular question about that?
No, just wanted to be sure you weren't planning for Aiken County on our money.
Oh, no. This was... That was done several years ago.
Okay, anything else for Martin? If not, thank you so much, Martin. We appreciate it. We'll move on to the Prospect Airport project, and we have our new airport director, Brent Brown, and I still call him new. I think he came on board in November. Doing a really great job. We're really proud of you, Brent. So tell us what's happening at the airport.
We have a couple things going on. We have broken ground on our elevator, which goes from the parking level up to the terminal level. They've done all the excavation work and have begun pouring the foundation for the elevator shaft. So we're excited about work that project to go through. Have a working elevator. To partner with that, we are currently working on a grant application to do move forward with the design of the parking structure that will be part of that elevator. So hopefully we'll get work from that soon within the next few months. I don't know, hey Chris, but yeah, so we're going to be working on the design for that, and then we'll move forward from there. But those are the two projects that we have.
Thank you. That's an exciting project, having an elevator. Okay, we're going to skip Boyden's unit for the moment and go on to KYTC Central Updates with Bart Bryant, and I believe Bart's on the phone, maybe. Bart?
I'm right here, and hello to everybody, and just want to kind of go over, touch base with a few things that's going on with the Transportation Cabinet, especially in Frankfort. Want to make everyone aware that Secretary Thomas did announce new two upper leadership positions. We had a retirement of our state highway engineer, Patty Duddingway, in December, and he recently named Andy Barber as Ms. Dunaway's replacement. So Andy Barber is now our new state highway engineer. And also there was a vacancy in the deputy secretary position under Secretary Thomas for the last couple of years, and he instituted Mr. Paul Looney as our new deputy secretary. So both of these are cabinet employees, our current career employees with the cabinet, and so those were internal promotions to both of those gentlemen. So we're excited to have Mr. Barber and Mr. Looney in leadership in support of Mr. Secretary Thomas. With that, we're currently, the General Assembly is currently in session, and it is a budget year, meaning that our General Assembly and Governor are putting together our budget and our transportation plans that cover not only the next 2 years biennium for the funding, but also the next 6 years as far as the planning part of the budget. So with that, the Governor sent his recommended plan to the legislature in early January, and it accounted for about $6.6 billion overall in projects. And a lot of that focus was in on the preserving and managing our bridges and pavement. So the large focus is on fixing some of our current infrastructure. And there's about $2.3 billion part of that plan, $2.3 billion going into that effort as well. And then as Terry Sicking, who's there, is well familiar with our SHIFT initiative for planning for future projects. There were a total of $2.6 billion in the SHIFT projects as well. Those are prioritized on a local level, and some of our county judges and mayors and local officials that are familiar with the process over the last 15 to 18 months to get those prioritized and also get those into the plan. So with that, that still left about $6 billion in projects that we had currently in the old plan, but unfortunately with the shortfalls in revenue, we still feel like there's about another $6 billion in projects that we would love to have funding for and more revenue for. But in this case, those were included in the plan, but those are unfunded as currently for now. So the Governor is putting a special emphasis on repairing and looking at deteriorated bridges, and there's a portion of the budget, over about $179 or $180 million, specifically looking at 340 of our most deteriorated and needs on those bridges that have been identified statewide. And so it's kind of an exciting plan from the standpoint of maintaining what we have and fixing some of the current needs that we have currently, and also trying to have a balanced plan going forward with new construction too. So locally, the highway plan, as it's been put forth to the legislature, it looks like the current MPO has about $8.6 million in the plan for the next 2 years, and overall about $15 million over the next 6 years in the highway plan. And with that, Boyd County was also allotted over the next 6 years about $43 million in the plan. 14.7 of that is in the biennium. Greenup County had about $19.6 million allotted for county projects in the overall six-year plan, and the vast majority of that is actually in the biennium. So out of that 19.6, $17.6 million is actually going to be funded in the next 2 years in that biennium. Many of you all might have heard about the announcement from Brady Industries back last year about the aluminum rolling mill that's going to be locating there in the Greenup County, Boyd County area off of I-64. And those there's separate allocations for improving infrastructure along the Industrial Parkway there. I-64 near exit 179, about 2 miles north of that, the Brady Rolling Mill is expected to be starting construction here in the spring, and there's roughly about $19 million set aside in the highway plan for improving the Industrial Parkway, Kentucky 67, going north towards towards that plan and to the new plant location, and to help with the mobility and some of the needs of the expectations of what that plant's going to have. So currently, publicly, they've been announced that it's going to be 1,000 current construction jobs while they're building that plant over the next two and a half years. And then ultimately, they've announced that there's going to be 550 new skilled labor positions, permanent positions there too. So with the amount of traffic that will increase in that location, we're looking at four-laning the Industrial Parkway up to the location there at East Park, about 2 miles north of I-64. And there's definitely a dedication to try to improve that as best we can. And we welcome not only Brady Industries, but certainly certainly any other satellite industries and companies that may be wanting to come to this area, region, that's associated with that. So with that, that's about all I have. If there's any questions or any kind of concerns about that, certainly contact me at the district office here in Flemingsburg. But appreciate the opportunity to report what's going on in Frankfort.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any questions for Marge? Okay, thanks again. We'll move on and back up and do Boyd and Greenup County projects. And I think Terry's going to do those for us.
I'm going to report on behalf of Joe Callahan. He graciously provided us a sheet here that has some of the more important Boyd and Greenup projects that should be in your packet. I'm going to go ahead and start with the Boyd County project. A lot of these are continual projects from years past. So they're not anything new for any of us. It's just kind of giving you an update what they're going to do. There's one, I'm not going to go into great detail, but there's one in particular, well, two in particular here. We have the second item, which is 9-208. That's our sublocated fund for our Boyd and Greenup County area. So even though it's listed as Boyd County, it actually goes to the whole area of Boyd and Greenup. And those, for, like I said, are for our sublocated fund. The other one is down 9-8801, and that has been at the turn lane into, actually, I don't know if you're familiar or not, in Catlettsburg, where the Marathon Marine Terminal is, and that kind of area. So there will be turn lanes there, and that's going to help with safety issues and also getting their employees in and out of their facility. On the Greenup County side, I'm going to talk about two projects here. The first is the 9-1073, and it's to replace the bridge on Kentucky 244. This is where the new Ironton-Russell Bridge comes in to the Russell side of it, to the viaduct. And right now, like I said, they're going to be changing that configuration. And right now, utility agreements are nearing completion, and they're on schedule for early to mid-2018 construction letting. So be looking forward to seeing that. I know a lot of the residents there are very anxious to have that taken care of, because if you actually go drive that, it's kind of confusing. turned to stop, and you had to almost go backwards to go back into the city of Russell. The other one is deals with the Industrial Parkway and the city of Blackwood. And this is actually a connector road connecting Flatwood 207, which goes to the Industrial Parkway, which will actually take you to where Brady is and to I-64. Funds are now available to complete their environmental documents, and those should be completed soon. And they're going to be waiting for phase two design funds, and there have been design two funds. But like I said, they're looking now at the performance-based flexible solution and to help reduce the cost of the project, because that is a, if you look at the terrain, it's very, it's costly to go through everything. So they're looking at a bunch of different issues and trying to figure out what's the best solution to reduce the cost to have that project move forward. And with, like Bart was saying, you know, with Brady Industries moving there, there's going to be a lot of people wanting to travel to that area, and this is connected right now. The way 207 is, it's a very windy road, narrow, and I think for safety and congestion, it's going to be essential that that gets completed as well. So, but like there's a couple other projects on here, but like I said, if you have any questions, you can let me know, or and if I don't know, then I will get a hold of Bart or Joe Callahan, and there are a lot of good things happening for the freedom.
Good thing. Anybody have any questions for Terry? If not, the Lawrence County project, and we have Ralph Klein.
Just briefly, the trails project in Ironton, we're still waiting for the signature on the permit. Hopefully we get that, then we're ready to go to bid summer construction. We are doing a couple of minor street improvements in the Gateway project associated with the development of the hotel at that location. That's more of a local traffic project. We did attend at the invitation of the Ohio TRAC, who allocates the funding and things for major highway projects, and we did present a presentation as to how we can try to financially match or whatever the state investment. However, they did not allocate any additional dollars this next fiscal year for that project. So the other large project is Solid River, and I'll put that over to Patrick. He has a lot more information on that.
Yeah, we have the Solid Road interchange that's putting a roundabout in at the top of the interchange in South Point. That's a design-build project, and I just yesterday got notice that they have the funds encumbered, so I can go ahead and sign that contract and that project. We have other projects. You know, we got some slip repair projects that are going on with the environment out there the past couple weeks. It looks like we'll have a few more. But we have a couple of resurfacing projects within our area. And one is getting ready to go out to bid, and the other one, the funds aren't available until fiscal year 2020, and that road's breaking apart pretty well, so I need to try to get those funds pushed forward if I can. So we're working on the design to get that project complete. And County Road 410 at Walmart Way, that's another roundabout, and it is just waiting for the funds to come available in fiscal year 21. The other project that we're working on is US 52 and State Route 243, and that is an interchange operation study to see what kind of improvements we could do at the top of the interchange. You have an industrial park that's not too far from there, and trucks just have a hard time turning left if you've ever had the pleasure of taking that interchange. So we're doing a study to see what kind of improvement can be done at the top of that interchange and get it to a point to where we could have it as a design-build project. So that the first phase of that will be complete May the 28th. So those are the things that we're working on there.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have a question?
Well,
move on to the West Virginia DOT statewide freight study plan and critical freight corridor designations update. Brian Carr.
Lucky me. I'm filling in for Kevin Keller and Elwood Penn here today. I don't know if you've seen me around here before, but before I get started in that, I want to take the opportunity to introduce Chris Kensey. He is the new regional planning unit for our organization that's going to be working with all the MPOs in the state. So I wanted to give Chris an introduction. I'll sit down and let him talk. No? Not really? Okay. I'll show you that. He's technically my boss, so but I wouldn't put you under the bus. With respect to the freight corridor, pretty much all the MPOs have submitted, in West Virginia anyway, have submitted the freight corridors. We've kind of gone through that process. Right now, we're still finalizing some of the rural corridors, the rural freight corridors. I understand there's some discussions between FHWA and DOH officials right now. They're trying to get some things finalized and everything, but from what I was told, probably sometime here in the next few months, everything should be coming close to its conclusion on that. So, still trying to wrap them through the rural corridors. So, that in a nutshell is all I have with regards to the freight corridors. I mean, we've made a lot of progress here in the last year or so. Those that were at the planning conference that we had here this past fall, there was a lot of information and whatnot that was going around. So, I think we're on the cusp of finishing this thing up. So, that's pretty much all I have on the freight corridor. And I think
you
want to
talk about
right into the next one.
Roads to Prosperity Highway Program.
Prosperity. I would think anybody here, and certainly with West Virginia, knows that the state just recently passed the road bond referendum, which I think it was like $1.4 billion for bonds, as well as we have turnpike bonds. Our legislature's passed some legislation to increase our carbon bonding potential and everything. So we have a lot of things going on right now with respect to the roads to prosperity, all of this coming together at one time. We've been extremely busy trying to get all of our projects prioritized, what projects we can get out quickly. I'm to understand that the first round of what we call GO bond, GO bond, general obligation, is supposed to go out sometime this spring. The amount of money is still, floating around a little bit out there, but we're anticipating doing hundreds of millions of dollars in bond projects here over, starting this summer. And the big projects that's going to go out are those that require the least amount of right-of-way impacts, environmental studies impacts, for example, like some of our interstate construction projects. Essentially all the right-of-way and everything that's been needed for those projects have taken place years ago. So we're moving forward with those quickly first, and other projects that require a little more attention with regards to right-of-way and environmental impacts, they're going to take a little longer to come online, but we should be going full bore. You should be seeing lots of orange bells out there and slowing traffic here this summer. So get prepared for that. It's coming. That's essentially all I have for the roads prosperity. Anybody, I don't really have any other specific questions or comments, whatever, with regards to that with your area. Again, I'm not overly familiar with you guys. I don't typically work with you, but if there's any particular projects or anything anybody has a question about, let me know before I leave here today and get back to the office, and I'll try to figure things out and contact you.
Thank you. Any questions for Brian? If not, I think that pretty much completes all of our updates, so we'll move on to IOVA sub-allocated funds, and we're going to let Chris talk to us about that.
Thank you, and I do realize we're coming up on the two-hour mark, and I have been jotting down some notes and ideas on how to make these shorter for the future, so appreciate all of y'all's attention, and bear with us. I do realize we are stretching into the two-hour mark. So I will be brief. I will just, as a quick reminder, sub-allocated funds, these are funds that come to Kiowa that Kiowa is then responsible for basically creating our own grant system and application system and awarding and selecting projects to receive grant funding. In general, there's three parts of a project. You've got your initial study, you got your design, you've got your construction, right? Cuyahoga sub-allocated funds can be used for any of that. There is a 20% local match. The study portion, most importantly, is the part that Cuyahoga can take the lead on. We can basically do the administration work. All those presentations that we had earlier, off, you know, 30, 45 minutes of them that you had with the PowerPoints, those are all presentations and studies that Cuyahoga is taking the lead on that we're using our sub-allocated funds to help fund with some sort of a local match. In addition to those programs that Cuyahoga is taking the lead on, we've got other design and construction projects that we are more typical grant cycle that, you know, is open and we accept applications and then we you know, award the funding. That's what I'm going to talk about right here. We have got 13 projects that we had applications for, totaling almost $5 million that was requested. So we're very excited about that. We will be officially voting on those next meeting in April. So there's no action required right now, but we've got some really great projects from, you know, from West Virginia and Kentucky. Our Ohio projects are already ongoing. Our funds for Ohio are already tied up with some of the major projects going on in Morris County that we're really excited about. So if anybody wants more information about some of the specific projects, please just come up and find us afterwards. We'll talk you through. There's some good projects. I just don't want to take up much more of your all's time, because we're going to be hearing about these projects again in April when the board officially votes to approve those. Oh, I apologize. I do want to just mention real quickly the elevator at the airport. That's the first project that Cuyahoga sub-allocated funds has gone towards a construction project. So the ribbon cutting for that will be the very first project that our sub-allocated funds had a part of. So we're very excited to get to the ribbon cutting for that.
Okay, Technical Advisory Committee, Paul Davis.
Okay, everybody, let's wake up. we had a very exciting Technical Advisory Committee meeting on Tuesday. It was a long meeting like this when we basically had the opportunity to listen to all the exciting projects that were happening in our tri-state area. And it is, we are at an exciting time. We just had some of the most torrential downpour rains that we've had. We've had installers, the floodgates. And I know this weekend, according to Patrick, we're probably going to see those rains and the high river crest, again, pretty high. And so one of the things we talked about at the Technical Advisory Committee is building an ark and using the sub-allocation fund for building an ark for the Huntington. And for some reason, the animals are starting to line up two by two.
We just need a local match.
We just need a local match. Oh, my goodness. But anyway, one of the things that we did do was to elect a vice chair. I've been the chair of the Technical Advisory Committee now since Jim Rashaver. That's pretty well retired, so I don't know, 10, 15 years. But we do have a vice chair now, Patrick. I want to say congratulations to Patrick as our vice chair. And so, but anyway, we did. One thing that we do need the policy board to take action on is that. Three items in your TIP. In your packet, you do have a TIP amendment suggestion. I don't remember, but it's in your packet. And there's one new project, and then we're making some changes to some current projects that were already in the TIP. And one is the addition of a highway project in Wayne County, and it's consisting of a wetlands and natural stream construction. It's about a mile. I don't know that much about it, but I know that it needs to be put in the TIP, and if we need more technical detail, we can turn this away. There are Tri-State Transit Authority, my agency, is seeking to purchase new buses, and we asked for four at one point, and we're asking for money out of the sub-allocation funds. So Calvin received a lot of grant applications this time for proposals, and so we have backed off from asking for four, so we're adjusting the TIP to two. Similar situation in Lawrence County. They're needing replacement buses, and there's some technical corrections, and just moving some money around, and the number of buses and quantity has changed. And you can look at the TIP and tell the numbers. I won't bore you with that. We got a lot going on. And Slate, I want to remind you that the emission analysis are no longer required for transportation conformity, and I think that's pretty well it. But we do need to take action on the cost board.
You have a resolution. It looks like it's on purple-looking paper, and it amends the TIP MTP to include new projects and update the current one. So what's your pleasure?
I'll make a motion.
Motion's been made. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Has been seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. And you want to talk about the transit system status update for the Huntington, West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, urbanized area?
Well, I can talk a little bit about PTA, and these guys from Kentucky and Ohio may want to jump in. But probably, because we came to TMA, one of the most exciting things that we've been able to do, along with sub-allocation of funds, is our 5310 grant program, which is to help the seniors and folks with disabilities. And so now we have more, control over where these funds go and what we do with those, as long as we're helping the seniors and people with disabilities. So since we've now taken control, the PPA, of the 5310 program, we have provided vans for Huntington Housing Authority, Belmont Hospital in Kentucky, Easter Seals in Ohio, which was the buses were Tri-State Industries, CISO, and TTA's got some vans out of that. And these vans now are just, we're going to have another call for projects, and some of the things we're already thinking about is another van for CISO, and we're asking any of you that have any that's in the coordinated plan to actually come in for grant applications, because we need your proposals, we need your grant ideas, and we have the money. We have some money to do some things, but not a lot of money. And CISO is going to do contracted services, and so we're going to help them, and it's going to help them a little bit with some operating money. So that's kind of exciting to help our seniors in our community. And so we want to be thinking about what we can do there. All three systems are going to have their triennial review this year, and always a fun thing. But I think that's pretty well it. We did do a nice project in Milton for TTA. We put a couple of nice bus shelters in that area, and we're going to be looking to make, through at some point with sub-allocation funds, how we can make additional bus pull-ins and pull-outs in the tri-state area. So we're excited about this thing.
Thank you. Anything else on that topic? Hearing none, we'll move on to the 5310 transit program applications and asset management plan, and that'll be Terry again.
Well, thank you again, and I'm going to piggyback kind of what Paul talked about. He mentioned a little bit about the 5310 program. We have been working on this past round that the actual applications were started in April. The 5310 process is very long, and because we have to get a lot of documentation, a lot of federal regulations, TTA has to order the buses, we have to do whatever. So the 5310 program is a wonderful program, but if you do apply, just realize that it's a little lengthier than you're going out and doing that, but it's a good program. But for this round, and it's for the enhanced mobility of seniors and individuals with disabilities, this round, we actually combined the two funding cycles together, 2016 and 2017. The reason we did that is when we first became a TMA, we did not have a 5310 program, so we are playing catch-up right now. So our next cycle is going to be 18 and 19, and then at that point, the following cycle, we will be caught up, and we will have just one single federal fiscal year of funding for that. So there is a 20% match required, and we get approximately $245,000 a year, and it varies from year to year, but that's, like I said, just an average. This program is from all three states, and we put it in one pocket, one bucket, and everybody, it's not like sub-allocated funds, where each state has their own pocket of money. This is, it goes into one bucket, and everyone makes an application to this one, so it is a competitive process for receiving these. But so far, we've had more than enough money, so please feel free to apply in the future. Right now, we are in the process of verifying all of this documentation, and TTA is going to be in the process of entering all the information into the FTA database and ordering the vehicles. But what we have for this year, we requested a TTA, requested purchase four cutaway vehicles. TTA they also, for mobility manager, to help them and us to, with like the 5310 program and other activities that we, it's a lot of administrative work to do with that. And, you know, with staffing levels and being limited, this is going to, you know, be a great benefit for both our organizations. CISO has applied for funding for third-party contracted services, which is really as they get paid by the person. They turn the funding in, and they get paid on that way instead of just as an overall dollar amount to. They, you know, kind of, if you go from point A to point B, and they get so many miles, and there's a little fee and stuff that they do. So they'll be doing that, which is really, it's a pilot program. And we're hoping that we might be able to implement this throughout the whole tri-state area. They also applied to purchase one cutaway vehicle. And also, I believe TTA has requested for the purchase and installation of two additional bus shelters. So really, the total project cost for all of this for the 2 years is almost $602,000 with a 20% match with a grant request. Funding back to our area is $491,000. So that's a good amount of money that will be going to our transit and for our seniors and disabled individuals. So we want to thank all the TTA for all the support that they put into it. And like I said, we do a partner, we share administration fees with this. So we couldn't do it without the partnership. So thanks.
Thanks, Terry. Anybody have any questions for Terry? If not, we appreciate that, and we'll move on. Is there any old business to come before the meeting today? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. Is there any new business? We do have dates for our next Power Policy Committee meetings, which would be April 27th and September the 28th. If there's no other business to come before the meeting today, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you all so much for coming and staying. We appreciate it.
We have a ruling in Kentucky, 1 hour.
1 hour.
Maximum, yeah. And if